Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, and a jury-rigged show right now. I have to tell you, we're hoping that we stay afloat. We've been under attack here for about the last 15 hours, and the people in the deep state don't like to be exposed, and not just myself, but my sources. We've all had the runaround, but we think we're up, and we got a really interesting interview. For me, this is a fun interview, because as you know, I'm a former coach, and I get to interview another former coach. And that's always a lot of fun. We're going to be actually talking about pride in country and using sports teams as political soapboxes inappropriately. We're going to be getting into all that. Our guest is Ronnie Mitchum, and I'll be telling you about Ronnie in just a moment. First, I need to let you know there's a couple of groups out there that make this show possible. One of them are the good people at Noble Gold. Don't do what my mom's family did on her side of the family. They went from riches to rags because they left all their money in the bank, and the banks are now failing their stress test. They're hoarding gold. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. You need to call Noble Gold to see what they can set you up with, because you got to diversify your portfolio. It's not a matter of what you make. It's a matter of what you keep. So I'm highly encouraging you to give them a call at 877-646-5347, or you can go to noblegoldinvestments.com. We're also brought to you by the best storable food company in the world. And with the coronavirus, or whatever you want to call it now, coming here, it's now quarantining 23 million Chinese. There could be a time when you have to hunker down. Are you ready? Do you have your food, water, guns, gold, ammo, medicine, tools, all the things preppers say you need to have? Well, food and water at the top of the list. We can help you with the food. 40% off the two-week emergency kit. Restaurant quality, no glyphosates, no GMOs. 25-year shelf life. Go to preparewithdave.com. Well, like I said, this is going to be a fun interview. We've got Ronnie Mitchum. He's a former football coach and a present pastor. He's an ordained minister, to be more exact, with more than 25 years of experience in the ministry. And he's led churches in Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, Texas. And he does a lot of really good things for people. And being a Christian myself, I appreciate that affiliation as well. We're going to explore that as well. And in 2017, we're going to kind of set the stage here. He had two teenage football players protesting during a national anthem. We've all seen that on TV, right? Well, we're being buzz bombed here. I mean, this is one heck of a day. I'm looking out here and I got the F-35s flying over my house. Wow. We have a home studio here. This is a day, a red-letter day that'll live in infamy here on the Common Sense Show. But anyway, to finish the thought here, Pastor Mitchum is also a former Marine, so high marks there. I'm a Navy brat myself. And he just was simply trying to impart life's lessons to kids who need guidance, kids who could benefit from the discipline of a sport like football, teamwork, self-sacrifice, all that good stuff is taught. And unfortunately, he ran into a social issue where people think it's cool to denigrate those who have served in the armed forces and put their lives and oftentimes given their lives in the defense of their country. And I tell you, Ronnie, I want to welcome you to the show. My friend, if I would have been in your position, I'd have done exactly the same thing. I would not let anybody denigrate the service of our brave men and women in uniform.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be with you today.
Well, let's talk about your background a little bit. Tell us about your football background, and we'll go that avenue to lead up to how you got to be the coach of this football team.
Well, my coaching experience, I was a pretty good football player myself, and actually passed on some opportunities to play college football because I thought I knew everything and wanted to go in the Marine Corps. And so I enlisted and ended up at Parris Island. And once I got on those yellow footprints, I realized, you know what? I wasn't near as smart as I thought I was. I later on went back to college and was actually going to play for one of the schools that had offered me a scholarship in high school. The coach who recruited me actually became the head coach and remembered me and welcomed me back. But I had, you know, a few years had passed. I'd got out of Marines and had my own business and different things. And so I went back with the intention of being a football coach and with, you know, going to preach on the weekends and coach on the week, during the week. And that was my dream. That's what I wanted to do. And actually, during that process, the Lord moved on me to put the football coaching aside and to actually focus on ministry. And so after so many years of ministry, the Lord finally opened up the opportunity for me to start a football program here in my area out of my church, which was high school and junior high for kids who homeschool. And so we joined the league here in Texas, and that's where we started coaching in 2012, this program. But I had done some other coaching over the years, but this was, you know, the first time that it was my program and was able to bring in what I wanted to do, and that was to focus on Christ and teach young men that work, hard work pays off, and discipline and doing what you can to better yourself. And so when the kneeling situation started, you know, we actually just talked to them about that and made a straight out rule. I explained to them why it was offensive. I'd served in the Marine Corps, but besides that, I was patriotic, loved my country, and that did not represent what our program meant when you disrespect the flag. And if they wanted to protest, they wouldn't be on our team. And then two of them did. So that's pretty much where we got into this whole situation.
Well, that is, boy, that's amazing that kids that already knew the score. You know, did you point out to him that Colin Kaepernick's life really hasn't gone as he really expected after he's pulled those stunts?
Well, of course, they were seeing the news, and you know, young people are just so impressionable. They thought it was a cool thing to do. And, you know, I had went over this the year before and that year and the Thursday night before that Friday game, mm-hmm. I went over it again. And, I explained to them, I said, you know, you don't disrespect to get respect, and you don't disrespect the great symbol that represents freedom for all men and women around the world. And I said, you know, we're not going to be a part of that. It doesn't represent our program. And, I got a phone call the next morning. You know, from the father who, text actually then turned into a phone call. But, and I tried to reach out to the boys, tried to get them to come see me and try to work something out. But, I even offered some other ways to protest, you know, that wouldn't be disrespectful during the national anthem. And, they just, led me believe that was good. And then we got to the game and they didn't do what they'd agreed to. They went ahead and I did their protest, and I immediately walked over, shook their hands just like we teach them when they show up at our program. First thing we do every spring, every fall, is teach them how to shake our hand and look us in the eye and say, you know, afternoon coach, things like that. And so I walked over to him, shook his hand, told him, appreciate your time as Shark, but your time as Shark is over. Now, there's only two players that did this. Nobody else on the team did, and you know, so it wasn't a team deal, it wasn't a big movement, it was just two young men who were both related who felt that they could do that, and they bragged about getting famous. So, you know, I think a lot of it was more just in the ideal of, you know, getting on TV and all the things. They sure caused a lot of trouble for a lot of people.
Did they get themselves on TV?
Oh yeah, they got on TV. And you know, of course, I did too, but I wasn't wanting to be on television for that reason. You know, but because they, but the time I got home from the football game that night, about midnight to my house, newspaper, Houston Chronicle here in Houston called me. And I know it sounds naive, but I'm not used to newspaper calling me at 12 o'clock at night and interviewing me. So they let me know it was the interview, but it really just didn't register to me. I was tired. And so I talked to them, and so it was obvious that it was pre-planned. Nobody could that quickly be notified in the news on a Friday night at midnight and calling me. And by the next morning, it had hit the internet. and through the Houston Chronicle, and I had ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. I mean, you name it, everybody was bombarding me trying to interview me. And, of course, each one of those were trying to tear me apart because they felt like America felt like they did, that, you know, it's okay to disrespect the flag. And I just simply told them, you know, it doesn't matter what you think. It was my football program. They played on my team. Nobody forced them. They joined on their own free will. We had rules, and we were going to force those rules. And nobody was going to stand in our in that shark uniform and disrespect that great flag that represented men and women who have fought across this world. And many of them died and shed blood and come back with without limbs. There was no way that was going to be happening on our football program.
Yeah, calling you at midnight, that, I've been interviewed a lot in the media through my coaching career, and I have never experienced that. No one's ever called me at midnight.
Yeah.
What outfit were they with? Were they print media, radio? What were they?
Well, the Houston Chronicle was
a paper.
Newspaper, okay. Yeah. But before daylight, it was already out on the internet. And, so by, you know, daylight, I'm getting all the local news channels wanting me. And then I'm getting, I mean, Don Lemon, you name it, everybody and their brother that was liberal media was wanting me on their programs. So
Don Lemon, boy, that wouldn't have been a setup, would it?
No.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to the show, you scumbag. I mean, I can just see you now. Yeah, I just, wow, that's incredible. So did they show up at your house, like CBS and these news outlets?
Yeah, well, all the local news channels came over and interviewed me. At first, I wasn't going to interview. And then, you know, I decided that, you know, my story was true. What I believed in was true. And those young boys, we never had a run-in, never had a problem. I still loved them. We had a disagreement on that issue. And so I went ahead and did the interviews. And it was, you know, amazing how they come in and they're trying to catch you. They're constantly recording you even when they don't show they are. They got the camera pointing the ground, but they got their mics on. And they'd work so hard to try to catch me and thought they could trip me up, you know, but it didn't happen because it was just the facts. I love my country. I'm not going to allow that kind of activity, you know, when you're representing the program that I started and spent countless hours, hundreds and hundreds of hours promoting you as a coach, you know, and I was athletic director and football coach of a high school football team. We're traveling all over the state, just everything involved. But, you know, the story didn't change. I had NPR come in here, interview me. I had New York Times. They wrote, I mean, they called me and wanted to interview. So we did an interview with New York Times. And I believe that the story possibly was in every major news source in America and around the world, because I heard from people from China, Australia, Europe. I mean, it was just amazing. And a lot of them were all thanking me for standing up for our country. They had said they were sick of seeing our country being disrespected, and they appreciated my stance.
Even the New York Times?
No, not the New York Times. I'm talking about people who contacted me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But
from
I'm saying,
these articles.
That's not the New York Times M.O. No. You know, it's funny. They contacted me on an article I wrote about the election of 2016, and I was really promoting Trump and denigrating Hillary Clinton. And basically, I got asked the question by the New York Times, are you going to, you know, when have you stopped beating your wife? They basically said, well, here's what they asked me exactly. When you lose the election next week and Hillary becomes the president, are you going to keep encouraging fighting in the streets? That's the kind of interviewing that the New York Times does.
Right.
And that was really interesting that they contacted you. But, you know, it seems to me, Pastor, that you have another argument there. If you had a team rule and you reinforce that team rule and it's applied equally, they're guilty of insubordination. Doesn't matter what the political issue is. They could have appealed the rule, but they were insubordinate to a team rule that by being on that team they've agreed to.
Right. Yeah, and that was the whole issue. You know, they didn't have to play for me. It wasn't like a public school situation where they were, you know, they just district to you and, you know, zoned in your district. These guys came on their own free will, and they knew from as soon as that all started, I addressed it with our team, and I said, listen, you know, people of all colors have died for that flag during the Civil War. Black men died under that flag. White men all fighting for the same purpose.
Yeah.
I said, this is, you know, this is not acceptable, and we won't be doing it, and we won't have it on our program. So, you know, you're talking about a year even before that, and these two players were on the team at the time. Never heard a word from them.
Right.
And so the news media tried to make like I was, you know, wouldn't listen to them and wouldn't talk to them. That was not the case. We had a great relationship, never had harsh words that I can ever remember. I mean, they were great kids, and we got along great. My son, one of them was my son, one of his best friends. One of the players spent the night at my house. I took him to football camps, and I mean, we've ate meals together. It was, you know, just the fact that somebody famous was doing this, they wanted to get out there and do it, and then have a reason, say, well, look, I'm doing it for all these reasons. But the facts were, you know, nothing come of that except a lot of disrespect and sowing seed into young men that it's all right to disrespect your country. And, of course, America is not perfect, Dave. Me and you know there's been problems over the years in certain situations, but most of that is not because, I mean, well, none of it is because of what our country stands for. It's because of some of the rotten politicians we've had in office and men, corrupt men who have created these issues. But our country itself has always represented freedom for all men. And we, you know, I don't want to be a part of teaching young people that there's that disrespecting our country is a proper way of action.
No, I listen. I think that's those are good lessons to impart. How many kids did you have on your team at the time?
Well, we played six-man football, which I know a lot of people, when you're listening here, probably don't even have a clue what six-man football is.
I know what it is.
Okay, well, in Texas and Oklahoma and I think up Nebraska and Colorado, there were places where people live in small rural areas. They started a 11-man version, but it was six men because they didn't have enough guys on their teams. And in Texas, it's still big. With homeschoolers and private schools. We played at a lot of public schools actually play six-man football in Texas. We actually had the pleasure of beating a couple of them on their homecoming. And so we're always proud of that because they always thought they would beat the homeschoolers. But we were blessed with some great athletes. And we had that year, I believe, 13 players. So we lost the two. We were down to 11. And with those two, just to be honest with you, most people had thought we would win the state championship because we had a great football team. But after that, I mean, it was a big blow to all of us. And when kids are scared to come to practice because of all the death threats and horrible things that are being said, it's a little hard to get kids to focus, and us too. And we got to have security watching the football field, you know. It's a little bit different story.
Were you kind of a standalone entity, or did you have an administration you reported to?
No, I mean, yeah, we have our little board that we had set up, and there was absolutely everybody behind me 100% on it. You know, everybody was in agreement without any issues whatsoever.
Okay, that's really good to know. I'm just flabbergasted, though, that kids would allow themselves to be intimidated away from football team. I don't see the law. I mean, the kids I've been associated with, I mean, I think if there was gunshots over the football field, maybe. But,
my kids, I mean, we finished the season, uh-huh. But I'm just saying it was hard to focus and really, you know, be the team. And when we lost those two, they were two great players, and that was something that only a few people really understood, that this was so important to me. The news media never could understand it, that if I was just doing this because they called me a racist and they said, you're just doing it because they're two young black boys and you don't like black people, you know, and I said, listen, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. I said, I have a multicultural church. I have Hispanics, blacks, whites, you name it, in our church. My piano player is from Uganda. So, you know, you're barking up the wrong tree when you start calling me a racist. I've preached 25 years against racism. And so when, you know, the point that they forgot was, if it didn't mean that much to me, why would I throw away a state title? Dave, you're a coach. You know good and well. I mean, there's, you work hard. Those kids work hard. Everybody fights to win that title. And that's something you'll have for the rest of your life. When those, when I removed those two boys off our team, because they were star athletes, and with the other kids I had, we were a great football team. And, but you know, that, what was more important to me was teaching young men the right thing, to have respect and accountability, and also to show, you know, that there would be no disrespect to our nation. So that was more important to me than it was to win a state title.
Well, Ronnie, I wonder, what year did this take place? Was this 2017?
Yes, sir, 2017.
Was that the last year of your program?
That was about our fourth game of the season, I believe. Fourth game. Yeah. No, we've tried to put a team together since. Now, we had been hit with high numbers of the 2 years before. You know, we had run up to having, I think, about 20 kids on our varsity and so forth. But graduation hit us hard over the last few years. And then with the stigma, I mean, you know, conservatives are, they believe what they believe, but a lot of them are not wanting to get out there and say much about it. And, you know, they like to keep it to themselves. And we had some parents that, you know, hey, I can't wait for my son to play for you. But I think a lot of it was also, you know, hey, it's, I believe what the coach did. I appreciate it. But, you know, I don't want my son over there getting in any kind of situation that would harm him. So, but we hadn't had football since then, and I miss it. Believe me. I wanted to coach my son these last 2 years. We just went to his banquet Monday night for his last banquet of his football career as he's finishing high, is done with high school. He's playing basketball now for his last year, but being a senior. But, you know, my dream was to help get to coach him, actually, and didn't get to do that the last 2 years. But it is what it is, and I would still do it again today. I love my country, and I'm not going to stand around and allow somebody to disrespect my country without having something to say about it.
That is just amazing to me. You know, I pray that you'll be able to reestablish your team, because kids need to be exposed to this kind of an environment, because all too often in the public schools, they're not. You know, you're lucky, though. I'm a little envious of what you got to do by introducing Christ to your team. There are so many prohibitions in the public schools now with this. I remember a case here a few years ago in the Phoenix area where I live, Tempe Prep had a really good football team, and the coach made the, quote, mistake, unquote, of praying with his team before the game, and they suspended him for 2 games, and the team never recovered.
My goodness. Yeah, it's insane, Dave, how that they have a problem with you simply praying with young men. I mean, it's insane. I didn't have that problem, but I've talked to a lot of coaches. A lot of coaches have talked to me since all that happened. You know, and they're like, you know, I would do the same thing. They say, I worry every day because, you know, I don't know with the way things are in the public schools, you know, you just have issues constantly. You're always walking, trying to make sure you're covering your bases. But I know there's a lot of great Christian coaches out there and, in public schools, a lot of great men that are making an impact in those young men's lives.
Yeah, I almost had an incident like this, and fortunately I had an athletic director that headed it off, but I had a list of team rules, and I submitted it to the athletic director. He didn't say anything. And it was about 6 weeks into the season, and I was walking by his office, come in here, and he had an email signed by four professors that objected to my team rules. And I said, "Or are they alcohol distributors or marijuana dealers?" I said, "What's the deal here?" And he's laughing. He says, "No, no." He says, "It's your last sentence on your rules, and it's really not a rule." He said it was just a statement, and he didn't even enumerate it. And I said, "Well, what would that be?" And he goes, "Play each day as if it's your last day and celebrate the talents that God has bestowed you with." Oh, and for that, I had professors stand up against me.
Well, it goes to show while we're in the issues going on, we got when we have those kind of men in the college is teaching.
Yeah, and he said, well, what do I tell them? And I said, you can tell them for me that they need to get a hobby because they have too much time on their hands. If they're reading my team rules and formulating defenses against them, I said, they got to go get their own team or get a hobby. You know, go hunting or something. But
you know, Dave, what amazes me is they're still, as a minister, as a football coach, just as an average person, period. If these men who are so bent against praying and Christians having their Christian groups in schools, but they have no problem with any other group, why are they so afraid of a bunch of boys on a football field kneeling and praying together? What is? But they don't believe in it. They say it, you know, it's not real, but yet they're afraid of it. And nativity scenes, whatever it may be, they're petrified, terrified of the fact of these crosses being up, you know, even in public places and all the things that they're afraid of. It just makes you realize, you know, I don't go around trying to fight the Easter Bunny, you know, because that would just be a waste of time. I don't even mention it. If somebody believed in the Easter Bunny, I'd be their business. I'd never. They know deep down, because innate in every man is knowledge that there is a God. And because of that, they can't fight that, even though they try to deny it. And so just giving proof constantly over and over again of that fact.
You should be really careful. First of all, I'm the interviewer, so you should be careful about the questions you ask me, because I might actually answer them. but when you ask me about what are they afraid of, well, I deal with the mainstream media all the time, and I cross over some into it. But I have to tell you, there's a lot of good men and women there, but there are some people that serve a higher power, and it's not the higher power that you and I serve.
Right.
And this is where they fear God. This is why they want to control the First Amendment, take away our guns so they can enslave us. I mean, take away our rights under the Fifth Amendment, because God grants all freedom. You have the right to choose and follow Jesus, or you don't. And that freedom is given to you by the Lord, not by men. And they want the power. They want to dispense the freedom.
Right. Well, you know, you made a good point there, too. I like what you said, but also, a lot of the news media, even though they report, their report turns out the way it does, a lot of that's not the actual people you meet doing the reporting, because I've met some really great people who came to interview me and done interviews with me who, you know, it's their bosses. They have to turn in, and then you got editors, and they change and correct what they wanted to do, and they edit their film they shoot on location. So you know, there's a lot of great people. They're stuck in an environment where they don't have much of a choice but report it the way that their bosses want it reported.
Yeah, that's true. You know, one of the things you did that I really, really appreciate, and I should have mentioned this when you were talking about this, was you didn't just impose an arbitrary rule on these young men. You talked to them about the fact that there are legitimate avenues of protest. It's just some things are appropriate in some settings and other things aren't. You showed sensitivity. Let me ask you this. What did you offer them in terms of possible ways to let their feelings be known without disrespecting the flag?
Okay. Well, let me set the stage real quick, because, you know, like I said, the night after practice, the next morning, about 7 o'clock, so we kick off at 7. So I had less, you know, than 12 hours actually to even get anything tried to work out, because that morning, I would say 7:30, I got the first text. So I offered to the dad and I offered to the young men. I said, look, I said, you know, you're not going to kneel without getting removed off the football team. And it show of disrespect, you're off during that national anthem. I said, but I will. I said, why can't we do something positive in a good way? I said, if you want to, after each touchdown, I said, you want to kneel? We'll even put in our brochure, our little, you know, game thing you pick up there, a brochure. I said, we'll put it in our game program. I said, we'll put in there why you're kneeling. I said, and one of them had supposedly wrote a report on this, which I just found out that day. I don't even know if it was actually true, but supposedly had wrote a report on this, book report, and was making that paper. I told him, I said, I'll take that paper, I'll print it out, I'll make it available to the fans if they want it. We'll put it at the concession stand, the front gate, whatever. I said, and we'll pay for all the printing. I said, if you just will not kneel and do it during the national anthem. Because, look, I may not agree with your protest, but I do believe you have a right as American to protest. So we're not trying to interfere with that. But we're not going to allow it during the national anthem. So, you know, we did what I could, as quick as I could, to come up with a solution. And actually was led to believe that they were going to do that. They showed up at the game. Asked them right before the game, we're warming up. You know, we're good. Both of them acted and gestured that yes. And then, of course, once the prayer started in the national anthem, it was a different story.
You said you had contact with one of the fathers here. How'd that discussion go?
You know, me and that father always got along great. And he actually, you know, I told him, and he was like, Coach, I hope they'll do it. I don't know, you know. He said, but I don't want to waste my gas if they're going to do that to come out there.
So the dad supported you.
Well, I can't say 100%, but I think he understood me, you know. And when all this happened, he never got involved after that. The mother of one of the parents, and she was the aunt of one of the players, she was the one who came out and called me, said that I was, you know, a lot of different things, but she said I was like a slave master that used to beat them, whip them, and kill them as such. And, you know, said these things, but said I had no integrity. Said that she didn't want her son and nephew playing for a man that had no integrity. Of course, Todd Starnes and different ones made in their comments, well, this sounds like the kind of guy your kids need to be. If he didn't have integrity, he wouldn't have stood on his ground and stood for what he believed in. So, but, you know, the father, actually, I never had any more communication with him, and he never tried to get involved in it, as far as I could tell.
You know, it's funny, too, how the aunt just happened to skip over the part that everyone agreed to the team rules. So,
yeah,
that's the thing that's really disturbing to me. You were proactive. It wasn't like this came up and you had a knee-jerk reaction after the fact. You were proactive, and these kids knew the rules. Yeah. And for that aunt to say that is reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, that was a tremendous insult, and to say that I was, you know, like a slave master was, you know, very insulting to me as a minister, as a coach, as a human being. But then, you know, what I guess, Dave, one of the things that the media really loved was they said after that I throwed them off the team, I made them strip on the sideline, which is a complete lie. And there was all these people there who could testify and would have, but the news media never went out and interviewed one person that was at that football game other than the two players and the mama who went on the local and national news and said that I made them strip down. Now, I said, well, here's three things I want to ask you. One is, if I just threw you off the football team and I couldn't make you stand, how in the world did I make you strip once I had told you off the football team? Second of all, if I had thrown you off and made you strip, your mama was up there with your uncle and your little brother, and they were clapping and applauding y'all. And I said, it's funny to me that they had their phones in their hands. They knew what you were doing, and they were going to put it on television, all this. But yet there's no videos ever come up of showing me making you strip. Because the reality is, it would have showed exactly what I did. I told them, I pointed across my chest. I said, you can go up there and change, and I want my equipment left right here, and I pointed to the ground where I wanted it left. We paid for all that equipment, and those boys were using my equipment, and I wanted it back because, as you know, as a coach, that kind of stuff's expensive.
Oh, yeah.
With a program like ours, we had to count for every dollar. And so I was making sure we got my equipment back. But so the media immediately said, you made them strip. Well, I didn't even know that until the last interview, after I'd done three or four interviews, that this is what they were telling them. So then when I watch it that night, you know, all of a sudden, I make them strip on the sidelines. So then everybody goes, you know, he's not only a racist, he's a racist pedophile who makes the boys strip on the sideline.
God. Well, by the way, that has happened with the stripping. Back in my days as a high school coach, I had a kid that went to, a school on the East Coast. It was a Division I school, and they lost a game at the free throw line. And he brought him out in the arena naked and made him shoot free throws. I'm not joking.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I promise
he got
you
fired.
That
he got fired. He got fired for that. And that was on ESPN. It was years and years ago, but that has happened. But I mean, if you had really done that, you would have had the police showing up.
Absolutely. The mother would have come down there and, attacked me. I would imagine the week before she had went across the field and went after the other coach and the referees and the fans. So this was not a woman who was just an easygoing person. And could you imagine me making her kid strip right there and her not doing? So there were three things. You know, I couldn't have made them. I can't make them stand. I can't make them strip. And second of all, no, there's no evidence, and there's about 30, 40 people that I know of personally that were standing there and would testify. Hey, coach didn't make those boys strip. He went back to coaching. You know, like I do, when the games get ready to start, you got to be there on the sideline to coach. I told them that, and I walked off to the sideline and had to have a quick meet with my team because my team was mad that they had done that. So, you know,
the kids supported your position on this?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Most of them, matter of fact, they told me, they said, coach, if you hadn't put them off, we would have walked off. And so that's how patriotic my bunch is. One of those young men's in the Navy right now serving overseas. And got some others, you know, we got great kids. They were, you know, different colors. But they said, we don't believe like that, coach, and we're behind you. So they stood with me, and we ended up winning that game 31-30. But we finally got our act together and regrouped and got out there and won.
That had to be hard on your kids to find their level. You know, I'll just share this with you, too. I mean, we all have our crosses to bear, but it was not too long after I had retired from college coaching. And I got coerced into coaching a nearby high school team for a couple of years. And I really didn't want to do it, but I felt like civic duty time. And so we had this family come in. And they were African American, and the father's giving me the third degree, and you know, how could I know you were a good enough coach to coach my kid? He had no idea that I had an NBA background, that I coached in college, I played in college, and he had no idea, because I don't overwhelm the kids with that. It's not about me. And I just listened, and he says, and I don't know, coach, he goes, you're pretty white to me. I don't think you can coach my kid. And I said, oh, okay. And then my assistant looks at me, and he spoke up and said, Mr. Hodges was a head college coach for a very long time. And he looks at me and goes, yeah. And he says, Dave, what color were most of your players? I said, well, probably 80% were African American. And I said, I think I helped a lot of them go on to have better, more productive lives. But see, there are people that have those preconceived notions, but I can tell you this. The kids I coached, the parents I was associated with in the recruiting process, I'm still friends with a lot of them today. Wonderful people, wonderful. And they were, they'd be abhorred at your story, and they'd be abhorred at my story. But see, the media perpetuates this racism. These kids were probably great kids, but they thought it was cool how the media was portraying it, so they decided to imitate it.
Yeah, and that's the way I take it, because like I say, we and the kids had a great relationship, and up to that moment, matter of fact, you know, after they left, one of them was a senior, one of them was a junior, and so he went back to the public school down here in our town, and so the coach from this public school calls me, and he says, hey, he wants to come play for me, and he said, we got to have a letter from you saying that he's cleared to play for us. And so I gave him the letter that he could go play for him. And he texted me about it, and the kid did. So I texted him back, and I said, I signed your letter and sent it in to your coach today, so you're good to go. And I said, no matter what happened, I said, I still love you. And, you know, he come back and he texted me and said, coach, thank you, and I love you, too. You know, so Good kids, just caught up in a bunch of foolishness.
What a great Christian role model move that was. Truly, truly was. Because I know a lot of coaches under transfer rules would have said, well, that kid kind of screwed me. I'm going to screw him, and he ain't going to be eligible to play. I ain't signing no letter.
Yeah.
And you showed ultimate in forgiveness.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, it would have been easy to have done that, but, you know, the whole reason for building the program was to help young men. And I definitely don't want to hurt them, even they make mistakes, because I made plenty of mistakes in my life. And it was the people that came back in my life and forgave me and helped me through those mistakes. And, you know, I in no way wanted to be somebody who potentially kept that young man from playing college football. That was his dream. And actually, he's, last I heard, he went to play college football. So I was very happy for him.
Well, that showed you God had his hand on this situation. But where God will make it complete, and what I'm going to pray for, and I'm sure many in my audience will, is that you get a football team. And I hope you're still actively trying to recruit. I mean, we need people like you in coaching.
Yes,
most of the coaches I associate with, wonderful human beings. A lot of them do it for the right reason. Some of them don't. And you do it for the right reasons, and we need people like you working with the young men.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about your book.
I wrote the book for that reason, because the media would not let me get my side out.
Of course.
Just a quick little funny thing. I did tell my kids, seniors and players, I said, well, you may not have won a state title, but you can tell whoever says they won a state title or something else makes fun of your team because we didn't win. I said, you can always say, yeah, but were you in Sports Illustrated? Because we made it Sports Illustrated.
Well, you did.
But the Cause of Colors coach's story I wrote simply because I wanted people to see my side of the story, to understand why I did it, because there were so many lies told about me. And so I also put in here my testimony of how God touched in my life and created me, you know, why the patriotism, my time in the Marines, and a whole lot in this book. And it go into a lot of detail of the story. People have read it. I'm telling you, it came out the first day it came out on Amazon. It was, for the first 2 days, I think it was a number one new release in our categories. So, one of our categories. So we were excited, and we have, you know, just tremendous response from people about the book. I had a very talented lady help me write the book, put it out there to where it's in a good book form. And I've had kids. One of the neat things, Dave, I went to a school up outside of Chicago and was signing books for, I spoke at the Veterans Day, went to the school there. They had a Christian school. Was the year before I'd been the keynote speaker at graduation. And so I went, and one of the whole classes, the teacher bought each one of my book. I signed the book. But then to see pictures of them, and over the summer, kids from all different people all over the country with their kids reading this book, to think that I've encouraged kids to read was exciting, but also to help show them patriotism, love for country, and also a relationship with Christ is the most important thing they'll ever do.
Amen to that. Did you ever get any favorable press?
Not really. Todd Starnes was about the only one who actually, you know, I was on Fox News with him radio while he was doing that. And then,
good for Todd.
Besides that, really not. You know, I was on SBN, and they, on Francis and Friends, they gave me an opportunity, to share my story, and, you know, just a few friendly outlets like that. But really a lot of the main conservatives just ignored my story. I really will never understand why. I don't know if they were afraid because of the accusations I made them strip and stuff or what, but this book, you know, there's only my way to get this story out. And so with the book being out, a lot of people have realized that what they heard in the news was not true. And it's a great book, and I think your listeners would really enjoy it if they take the opportunity to get it. It's only about 210 pages. I had an old Marine Corps buddy who retired from the Marine Corps. He got the book on his day off, and he told me, he said, Ron, he said, I ain't read a book in years. And he said, I read your book in one day sitting there on my day off. He said, I couldn't put it down. So that's the kind of reports we're getting from people that don't even really read a lot, you know.
when you were going through all this false media reporting, and trust me, I've been there. The Washington Post called me a Russian spy during the 2016 campaign. I kid you not. I was one of 200 people they named. kind of the son of a naval officer. But anyway, long story short here, what I wanted to ask you was, when they were going through these outrageous false allegations that put you in the limelight of almost being a pedophile, did you ever think about getting a lawyer and taking action against for those libelous statements?
Well, you know, I there's always that thought because you don't know. But, you know, as a Christian, I really didn't want to pursue that. I would just rather, you know, they're going to be what they are. I had a guy, I saw one of them, he said that I was selling white supremacy material in my church.
Oh,
well,
my God.
I mean, this person never walked in my church, been in my church. How do they know what I sell in my church, you know? And, I mean, it was insane. Why would I have black families coming to my church if that was the case? I mean, I think they'd be the first ones to have an issue with me. So they just made up lies. I mean, I couldn't even follow all of them, Dave. It was so many scattered around, and the internet was just blowed up. You know, I would type my name in, Ronnie Mitchum, or my wife or kids, and, you know, just internet story after story after story about Coach Ronnie Mitchum. And it was quite shocking, and videos, YouTubes, of men who've never met me in their life who were just trashing me. And, you know, it's hurtful, but it, you know, hey, my God's bigger than all that, and I got more in me than that. I'm not like them. Don't want to be like them. I just want to tell the truth and love my country and love my God, and going to help every young person I can and every adult that I can while I'm alive.
Truly an example of turning the other cheek here, because they had to have done some outrageous damage to you with those comments in the media. Did it carry over into your church life?
Well, of course, you know, there's a lot of preachers who I was always pretty. I have a church, but I do quite a bit of evangelism as a guest speaker. And, you know, a lot of churches, pastors were afraid to have me, especially if they had mixed congregations, because they were afraid it might upset some of the people in their church that had heard my story or knew about me because of what had been said. So, yeah, it affected my ministry a lot, affected, you know, me. And I'm sure there's a lot of black families that would like to come to our church, but are afraid that if they did, they would get backlash from other people in the community.
Sure.
So, but actually, like I say, you know, we have a mixed church of different backgrounds and colors and nationalities, so it doesn't affect them. But I'm just saying, somebody new who knew that, they might say, no, I can't go there. I don't want to deal with that. You know, somebody saying, what are you doing in that church? So,
you know, to those pastors who were afraid to have you, I would say you'd also be afraid to have the disciples. You'd be afraid to have Jesus, because they were controversial.
Absolutely.
In their day, they were highly controversial.
Yeah.
I get distressed when I see that.
When you get a title slave master, you know, by the mother, that's the kind of stuff that people get, you know, they're a little afraid of that. So that was the most hurtful thing that was said. All the other junk's just lies. And but when she said that, and I took care and I loved on her sons, and as far as support, encouragement, coaching, teaching, and I had desire to get them scholarships and was working behind the scenes as I could to do that for them. And for her to say that about me, that was probably the most hurtful part of it all.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that them boys would do that, knowing that, you know, our great relationship had been there, and all of a sudden it's like, we don't care, Coach. You know, we're going to do this. So,
I don't think a lot of the people know until they coach that when you're a coach of a team, you love these kids. They become your family, and they stay your family even after they're not playing for you anymore. And it doesn't matter what color they are. It doesn't matter at one bit, but they become your sons. They truly do.
I got kids today, you know, that still call me and text me and email me all the time. You know, talking to me, saying, hey, Coach, they're in town. They say, I was at a basketball game here last week, and one of my old players who's at college and was just in, you know, happened to be in town, had the game, come over to me, two of them, matter of fact. and said, "Hey, coach," you know, talked with me and said, "Man, I miss Yark football," and we had a lot of fun. So, you know, great memories. You spend a lot of time with those young men. You get to know them very well. And
well, when you go to war, you go to war with each other. You know, you have that common goal, and you're working together all the time. It's a struggle that binds you together. It's kind of like veterans going to war.
Yeah.
People don't understand that about coaches and their players. Yeah. You know, when I stopped coaching, you know, I didn't miss the act of coaching very much. I missed being close to my players. That's the thing I miss the most. And I'm sure you sound like that same kind of person.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, there's nothing, you know, like it. It's something, unless somebody's ever experienced like you're talking about, Dave. It's just hard for people to understand the bond you make with those players. It's like basically going to combat together. You know, you're coaching, they're fighting, you're like the general and sending orders, but they're doing that, they're doing everything they practice to do and compete and fight for each other. And, it's just a tremendous time. Some great, great memories, you know, of games, decisions we made, we laugh about, you know, and you know, the humor that goes along sometimes in a team of just, you know, different things that happen or a player, something that they do, you know, just those kind of things. I got so many memories. And after I realized I wasn't going to have a football team again, I was out mowing the football field and I just sat there. And my wife said, "I saw you out there just sitting. Seemed like an hour or so. What were you doing?" I said, "Well, I was actually sitting there." I said, "I could visualize some of our games and some of the events that took place."
Mm-hmm.
My kids making big plays. I said, "I could just visualize." I said, "It's hard to mow that field without in certain areas thinking of a certain play that took place or, you know, kid making a great catch or a great tackle." I said, "It's going to be a difficult stretch, and last 2 years have been tough." But
yeah, but you know what? That's why you got to start recruiting today.
Yeah.
And let me know if we can be of any assistance to you. Sure. We got about 15 seconds left. How do people get your book, Ronnie?
No, they can go on Amazon and order it online at Amazon. And then you can also, Barnes & Noble has it online. And Zulon Christian Bookstores, which is my publisher, actually, they have a online store where they can also order the book.
Well, we've been speaking with Ronnie Mitchum, Pastor Ronnie Mitchum, hopefully future football coach again, Ronnie Mitchum. And Ronnie, you're an inspiration. You really are. It's truly my honor to meet you, and thank you for coming on the Common Sense Show.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you having me. It's great meeting you, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you.